Well, the 2018 North American International Auto Show has just opened to the public this weekend, and for several years now, longtime and widely respected Detroit Free Press auto critic Mark Phelan has provided us with some show highlights and also updated us on some of the green initiatives in the auto industry. Mark, as always, thank you for your time. I always look forward to our annual visit.
So do I. Thank you for calling.
Before we get into some of the broader issues I just mentioned, Mark, let's have a snapshot of this year's show. What are some of the highlights?
Well, there's never been a bigger show if you were a fan of new pickup trucks. We've got new ones from Chevy, from Ram, and also the rebirth of the Ford Ranger, which was a name that a lot of people knew and loved, and it went away for a few years. So we've got that. We've got SUVs, production and concept coming out of our ears because that's the direction the market is changing, is moving toward. There's really and so much driver assistance, safety, and steps toward the eventual autonomy of vehicles going into the new models. We've got all of that on display at Kobo.
Some people are wondering if this is still an auto show or if it's a technology show or if it's both with, I guess, BlackBerry's in this year and Intel and all sorts of tech companies.
Absolutely. And it's sort of fascinating because they're not just talking about, you know, kind of the obvious stuff like, you know, how you can use your BlackBerry with your car. They're talking about, you know, the things that get to the heart of the technology, like cybersecurity, because one of the big concerns as cars become more connected is how do you make sure that, you know, nobody can hack into your car and steal your personal data or, God forbid, take control of the car. That's a huge concern for automakers, but also for government, because the reason that a really accomplished hacker would consider doing something like that isn't because they wanted to play a prank on you. It would be because your car could be a gateway to the infrastructure, and then they could create real havoc. So BlackBerry is going to be talking about cutting-edge cybersecurity. There's really, you're right, technology and automobiles are inextricably intertwined these days.
Well, in terms of the autonomous side of the autonomous and connected, you've got companies that are dealing with artificial intelligence, right? I mean, it's pretty sophisticated stuff.
Absolutely. It's amazing because when you think about it, if you're going to let your car help you to avoid an accident, you have to give the car some decision-making parameters that really do approach artificial intelligence. I mean, you have to make sure that, you know, that the car, if it is going to swerve to avoid an obstacle, that it doesn't swerve into the oncoming lane where you get hit by a semi that's coming, for instance. So it's all tremendously sophisticated stuff, and there's a vast amount of time and development going into it.
Do you think most people out there are understanding the difference between this connectedness and then the autonomous part of this mobility equation?
I don't, and honestly, I'm not sure that it matters that much at this stage because both of those trends are converging, and the idea is to make it as simple for people to use transportation as possible. So, you know, connectedness, you can't have a fully autonomous vehicle without having a very connected vehicle. So, you know, there's a great deal of development going on, and those two tracks are converging.
Yeah, they're converging, but I think, is it fair to say that the connectedness part of it is probably going to be, we'll see more of that initially, and the autonomous part, you know, the driverless cars are rolling out, because there are a lot of other infrastructure concerns before we get to autonomous.
Definitely. Infrastructure is a huge challenge for a truly autonomous transportation system. And yes, connected vehicles are here effectively. You know, there will be more development, but you know, your vehicle may well be a 4G LTE hotspot now, and it you know, can do a Google search to find a restaurant for you, for instance. So that's you know, really something that is the present and the future, because we're only going to see more of it and more sophisticated implementations, things that will allow you to place your standard order at a restaurant that you go to twice a week, for instance.
My guest is the widely respected and longtime Detroit Free Press auto critic, Mark Phelan. Mark, let's go back to something you mentioned earlier when you were talking about the auto show, trucks and SUVs. Do you see that trend continuing? I mean, people, there's all this talk about electrification, electric vehicles and what have you, but it seems like folks are still buying trucks.
They are, and trucks, two things. First of all, when we talk trucks, we're really kind of talking about two different kinds of vehicles. There's the traditional pickup and the big, heavy SUV that's based on it, you know, something like a Ford F-150 and a Ford Expedition, for instance. And then there's a whole universe of vehicles that look like an SUV, but they're based on the same engineering as a car. That's vehicles like the Chevy Traverse that's built in Lansing, the Toyota CR-V, the Honda RAV4. And those are where the huge growth of the market is. People are switching from traditional sedans like a Chevy Malibu to vehicles like a Honda CR-V. And for several reasons, one of them just being that you're up a little bit higher and there's so many other SUVs around you on the road that if you're the only guy who's driving around in a sedan, you may feel like you're at the bottom of a well because you can't see around you. So simple visibility is a big part of the reason. And the vehicles tend to offer all-wheel drive and they've got, you know, good cargo space. So they're a very practical solution, and that's where the big growth in the market is. Pickups are growing a little bit, but they're essentially a stable size of the market. And that means that the vehicles like the RAV4, the Traverse, those, because they are engineered in many ways like a passenger car, can get the same kind of fuel economy that you would expect in a mid-sized sedan or a compact sedan. So the higher number of SUVs is not in itself inherently disastrous for the environment. It is a marginal change in fuel consumption and emissions, more than the big one we used to see in the past. And on top of all that, even traditional pickups and old-style SUVs are becoming electrified. One of the big surprises at the show this year is that the new Ram 1500 pickup, which is as big as a pickup gets, uses a semi-electrified version of Chrysler's iconic Hemi V8 engine. So you've got the engine that is the poster child for the muscle car, but even it is taking advantage of some of the technology that was developed for hybrids to give it a start-stop function to save fuel and to smooth out the restart so that customers won't complain and find that feature annoying. So fuel economy is going to be increasing regardless of what kind of vehicle we're talking about.
Electric vehicles we were at a presentation last year and we saw all the brands that were in process, all the new models that were in process or slightly out into the future. Do you see this trend? I mean, how did the Bolt do, for example, after its introduction?
Very well. It sold extremely well. GM is very happy with it. They're working on adapting the technology to more vehicles. So I think you can call the Bolt a huge success in every way, except that people like you and I can't speak for you, but I always have to stop when I'm talking about the Volt and the Bolt and make sure that I am beginning the word with the correct consonant. So that's the only problem facing the Bolt.
Let's switch gears here, and my guest is Mark Phelan, Detroit Free Press auto critic. Last year, it was sort of a question mark about the relationship between the Trump administration and the auto industry. It was sort of, let's wait and see what happens. Well, it's been a year now, and in the context of CAFE standards and other things, how would you assess that relationship?
Well, I think the president has more immediate fires to put out on other fronts, which is probably a relief to much of the auto industry. He did say that direct the EPA to reconsider the future fuel economy standards, but there wasn't the widespread rollback that people had feared. And I think that makes sense because the automakers all signed on to the upcoming standards, the ones that go out through the year 2025, and they're incredibly challenging, but they signed on to them because they understand that the world market is moving in the direction of higher economy, lower emissions. So the U.S. does not benefit if we try to make ourselves an island of different technology, because companies can't afford to invest for that many different sorts of technology. And also, if they've got predictability, even though the standards set by the 2025 target regulations are really, really challenging, if they've got a predictable goal, they're much more comfortable with that than the idea that the standards might swing wildly on a pendulum from one four-year administration to another. So they want a stable horizon for planning, and that still seems to be the direction that things are going, in spite of some of the things that the president said when he was initially coming in.
Yeah, I think that is a question. The ability to plan a certain amount of stability, less volatility. But you do worry, I mean, given some of the other things that have been coming out of this administration in the last year, that volatility or that lack of consistency could change. And that's probably got to give executives quietly some pause.
Oh, absolutely. They're watching carefully. I think they're more concerned because this seems to be a greater area of sort of immediate emphasis for him. They're more concerned about trade, the idea that the free trade agreement between the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, NAFTA, could be ripped up. Gives them a lot more headaches because that's something that, if it were to happen, would immediately have a huge impact on their sourcing, their production, and it would increase their costs very significantly. None of them want to see that because that means higher prices for the consumer, and that means fewer car sales, basically. So there's definitely still a weather eye being kept on the White House, but I think the greater concentration on the part of the industry these days is trying to make sure that trade policy is not counterproductive to an efficiently operating industry.
Well, since you mentioned NAFTA, Mark, that was one of my questions, too, because we're hearing from Canadians, and it's not just in the automotive sector, it's in the agricultural sector and other sectors as well. But the Canadians are already anticipating that the United States is going to walk away from NAFTA because they're proposing some conditions that are so outrageous that the Canadians can't even begin to negotiate.
Yeah, that is the concern. That's why automakers are watching those negotiations so carefully. And it's very difficult to predict what this administration is going to do and how successfully they'll carry through on the plans that they announce. So that is a huge area of concern for the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, I think, and very much still up in the air.
Well, Mark Phelan, Detroit Free Press auto critic, let's turn to something that's right in your wheelhouse and a little bit more pleasant to talk about than what's going on with trade negotiations. The Detroit Free Press car, truck, and utility vehicles for 2018. Just give us a snapshot of each and what's so special about these three vehicles.
Well, thank you very much. The winners this year were the Honda Accord for Car of the Year, the Volvo XC60 for Utility Vehicle of the Year, and the Lincoln Navigator for Truck of the Year. And all of them really are terrific. This was a very, very strong year for new vehicles in all segments. But I'll start with the Accord. It adopts new technology that Honda had been nervous about until now for fuel economy. It's got a four-cylinder turbocharged engine that's efficient and has tons of power. They addressed some problems they had with controls that were kind of a pain in the neck to use, a touch screen for adjusting volume and stuff like that they used to have in cars. They fixed that, and they've got now controls that are as good as anything in the industry. It's big. There's a ton of room for a midsize sedan, and it is fuel efficient and a good value. It was, for me, it was a very easy choice. for car of the year. The utility vehicle of the year, is the Volvo XC60, is interesting for some of those same reasons, but primarily because it's a compact luxury SUV that carries five people, and Volvo is using it to bring a lot of advanced driver assistance and safety features into relatively affordable vehicles. So, you know, it's got pedestrian detection, it's got autonomous braking, it has many, you know, features that will become more common as we move closer to widespread autonomy that we were talking about. And it's one of the first that really makes it affordable for, you know, people who are not shopping at the top of the luxury market. Plus, there's a plug-in hybrid that allows people who only drive, you know, 20 miles a day or so to do all of that driving on electricity. But if they need to go farther, they've still got a gasoline engine. So, you know, in many ways, plug-in hybrids, I think, are the ideal, you know, solution for people. So it's a very, very good utility vehicle. And finally, the Lincoln Navigator was one of the most pleasant surprises of the year to me, because Lincoln has struggled to establish an identity as a real meaningful luxury brand over the last couple of decades. And the Navigator, first of all, it's a very good-looking truck, but it's filled with really thoughtful details on the inside that convinced me that Lincoln understands that a luxury vehicle isn't just about power or technology. It's about giving the owners stories to tell and reasons to feel special. I mean, there's one little detail that I loved is that there's a mahogany wood that's used for trim in one of the interior packages, and, you know, like pretty much all woods these days, it's sustainably harvested, of course, but you look at it, and there are little sort of pricks of light in it, almost as if it were backlit, and it turns out that what they did was use a laser drill. As they moved forward on the panel, they kept the drill from back to front on the panel, they kept the drill in place over the wood for longer periods so that the almost microscopic holes got a little bit bigger as you move forward, and the metal underneath changes color more so that it's, you know, warm and appealing looking. And it's just, it's the kind of thing that somebody who's got a luxury vehicle will look at every day and feel good about and will point out to their friends. And it convinced me that Lincoln is on the track to becoming a meaningful luxury brand again.
Mark, let's go back to a little bit. You know, we talked earlier about mobility and connected and autonomous vehicles and all the research that's underway. A question that I've not asked you before, but it occurred to me that this might be a good time on MSU Today. The roles that universities like Michigan State and the University of Michigan play in this whole connected autonomous vehicle space.
Oh, they're increasingly significant. There's no question about that. A lot of advanced development is being done in conjunction with the engineering schools at leading universities like MSU and U of M. I know that MSU, for instance, worked on the development of some very technically aggressive lightweight materials that will be part of reducing weight and reducing and improving fuel economy, and that is now that was done in conjunction with the Department of Energy and is part of a new research center that's being built in Detroit these days. And the University of Michigan has a small area where they're working on autonomous vehicles, and there is just not far from Metro Airport, just west of Detroit, there's a huge new facility called the American Center for Mobility that is working with a lot of both companies and universities on the development of autonomous vehicles, because it's got what should be the biggest and the most comprehensive test track for the development of autonomy and of new safety features anywhere in the world. So there's a lot of work going on with leading universities.
Talk a little bit about your own experiences at MSU and the impact that they had on your life, and then a little bit about the state of journalism as a profession for young people who might be listening to this interview.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. I went to the School of Journalism at MSU, and I can't imagine anything that would have prepared me better. They teach not just the theory, but they send you out and you report on meetings, you cover things, you interview people, you write about stories. And I worked at the State News for 3 years, which was a phenomenal experience and has helped a lot of journalists begin their careers. Like most alumni, I have virtually nothing but fond memories of my time at MSU. I look forward to it whenever I get the chance to get back onto campus. Well, journalism in general, it's a conundrum to me, because the business model obviously has changed with the internet. Newspapers now offer all of the information we do in the paper for free on the internet, and still figuring out how to get people to advertise on the internet is one of the challenges. So the business side is challenged, but there's a greater thirst for information than there ever was at any time before, and I think the whole fake news thing has reminded people of the importance of trusted names, trusted brands, for want of a better term. That if you go to the New York Times, to the Washington Post, to the Detroit Free Press, if you go to someone that you know whose work you have followed, you can go take a certain level of confidence with what they've said, as opposed to just doing a Google search and believing the first thing that you come up with. So there are huge challenges for us. But the technology is moving in our direction because it makes it easier to get people information. There are new ways to get people information. I would never have thought that video would be such an important part of the newspaper industry, but now it is for our website and other purposes. I think the industry is changing, but it remains really exciting, and I think that with a bigger thirst for information than there's ever been before, we have to be able to find a way to make this work and to help people to figure out what are the trusted sources and what are the ones that they shouldn't pay too much attention to.
Well, in addition to working for the State News and all the things that you mentioned during your time here at Michigan State, if a young person asks you about maybe the three or four skills that are most essential to be successful, to be the next Mark Phelan, what would you tell them?
Tell a story. Learn how to tell a story. It's the same skill whether you're doing it in print or online, whether you're talking or writing. So learn how to tell a story. Learn how to ask critical questions, frankly, to see what are the things that this person isn't telling me. Don't ever be embarrassed to ask a question, because that's the only way you're going to find things out, and you will frequently be surprised. Nobody who's not trying to fool you will ever be upset if you ask them to explain more fully what they just said to you. I think those are the key skills, and enjoying reading, frankly. The more you read, probably the more likely you are to recognize good writing, and with any luck to be able to commit some of it yourself. And you see other people and they cause you to raise your game. You see somebody else with a really good phrase and you want to come up with one of your own.
What is your prognostication for 2018?
Everybody seems to agree that sales will go down, but not to a disastrous level. I would think we'll probably finish up 2 or 3% below last year, but all of the automakers should still be profitable. With any luck at all, there will not be any meaningful reductions in employment. And we will continue to see the shift away from traditional sedans toward SUVs or vehicles that look like SUVs, even though they are mechanically quite similar to the sedans. There doesn't seem to be any end in sight to that.
And what about the market share for electrics, all electrics, electric hybrids, what have you? What do you see in that regard?
The share for pure electric vehicles is going to continue to be a slow growth path, I think, because batteries and charging infrastructure remain the limiting factors. How far can you go on a charge, and how many places are there, and how quickly can you recharge? So I think we need a lot more infrastructure, and we need at least one more real breakthrough in battery material science before we can start looking at electric vehicles to get up to 4, 5, 10% of the market. And currently they're below 1, despite all the attention that is paid to them. However, hybrids and hybrid technology is going to be absolutely ubiquitous. It'll be very rare that you will see a new vehicle that is introduced that doesn't use some technology that was developed and perfected in hybrids. Like we were talking about earlier, the Dodge Ram with the Hemi V8, the poster children for old-style vehicles, have got several features that were pioneered by hybrids, and they've got a 48-volt electric system to run some of those systems. So even these vehicles that one might dismiss as being old tech are adapting and adopting electrification. We're going to see more and more of that. And we are going to see at least one more very interesting conventional hybrid vehicle. The Honda Insight name is coming back again. At the Detroit Auto Show, there's a really great-looking compact sedan that will be called the Honda Insight. We don't have official fuel economy numbers on it yet, but Honda promises that they think they're going to be able to challenge the Prius for fuel economy. So that should certainly add some life to the hybrid market, to the market for conventional hybrids, even as hybrid technology becomes almost universal.
Well, Mark, a great job of circling back to the 2018 North American International Auto Show, because that's where we started. The public opening is this weekend, and it runs through Sunday, January the 28th. Mark Phelan, Detroit Free Press Auto Critic. It's been a great conversation. Always appreciate your time. Lots to think about and write about in the coming year. No question about that.
I can't wait, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again when we know what's going to be happening at the 2019 Auto Show. Thanks, Kurt.